This podcast brought to you by Hope 103.2.
We are all products of the past, and the last century has been a cyclone of change. Well, that's a quote from Steve Biddulph's latest book, The New Manhood. In it, he argues that war, economic depression, more war, relocation and emigration have damaged our men to the extent that they have lost connection with their own hearts. Somehow, women have survived all these changes better and supported each other more. It's time, he argues, for a new man to emerge. Steve Biddulph is with me now. Thanks for your time this morning.
Hi, Katrina.
Just explain what you mean by the toll of history was that men lost connection with their hearts.
Well, I think if I look back through my own family history, and probably most people listening do the same, I had a grandfather who was in World War One. I had a dad who emigrated to Australia and the difficulties that put into my family's life. And his dad had been quite a violent man when he came back from the war. You don't have to dig very deeply to realize how much damage took place in the 20th century. And that some of the problems we have with men today, with being a sort of distant fathers, or problems with alcohol, or problems with making their marriages work, and not always just their own fault, but that they've inherited a lot of damage. And sometimes when we understand that, it helps us to make a new start a bit and be more successful at making our future lives go better.
But when in history did fathers sort of become more absent from family life?
Yes. Well, I mean, basically, for the whole of human history, apart from the last couple of hundred years, people lived in rural villages or in rural small groups. And if you travel to the third world, where people still live the way we all used to, then men are very good with children. If you travel in India or in the Pacific and some of the places I've studied families, dads and uncles and granddads are terrific with little children, and the teenage boys are always being taught and never just left to wander around like we have in mobs around shopping centres of a nighttime. And so I think the human tradition has been of men and women working very closely to raise kids, and the whole community helped in that job. And then all of a sudden we were thrown into this isolated way of life, and everyone away at the workplace. And we didn't really realize what we'd lost there. And I think now people start to think, in churches and in communities, people are saying we've really got to help each other with our children.
And how do you think that disconnect is manifesting in the lives of men?
What I think happens, and if I can give you paint a picture for you here, Katrina, of how I came across this, was that my main work for the last 15 years has been traveling the world giving talks about raising boys. And I go all over the world, and I do that with about 10,000 people a year. And when I'm giving those talks, I start off by describing the wounds that have sprung up between fathers and sons, and the how many men are not close to their fathers. And when I began doing that about 15 years ago, looking out over the audience, I would start to see people starting to cry. And it's quite a confronting thing to be doing a talk with maybe 400 parents in a theater, and suddenly all around the room there are people's eyes glistening. And when you're giving a talk, you do want to touch people, but the fact that people were actually upset made me realize this is a really widespread, and there's an awful lot of people that are wounded in the area of fathers. And I did two things about that. One is I started to make my talks a lot funnier, because I didn't want people to have a dreadful time. And the other thing was to think we've really got to address this. And so when I wrote The New Manhood, it was with the aim of letting people know that this is a very common experience, and it doesn't have to continue down the generations. We can be closer to our kids so they don't have to feel this way.
Stephen, how important is that father-son relationship in shaping a man's life?
I think that it's kind of the key to, and I think this is also for daughters too. I'm really interested in girls and daughters now as well. What we are really is we're like a bundle of all the good people that we've ever known. And so the people that loved us and cared for us and taught us, we take them into our own self. And that's what helps us to live our life. And so I think we didn't really realize that role models are the key to our humanity. And in Christianity, there's the idea that Jesus was a living example of what God's on about. And so it's an idea we understand, that you have to see an example. And so the thing that we didn't realize is that if kids don't get, you know, hours of fathering, so a lot of boys have never seen a good man, don't know any good men, and yet we expect them to somehow just suddenly at the age of 18 or 21 turn into one. And I think, of course, mothers can do a huge amount. We say that, you know, a mother can get a boy almost to wholeness.
Yeah.
But it's just that little bit of the actual example that boys need to see so they can knit all those pieces together.
So what do boys most need from their dads to grow into good men?
Well, I think that we look at this in a boy's life in three stages, where from birth to six, boys kind of live in the mother's world, and they're learning to love and to love life. And dads come in and they stir that up a bit, and they're exciting and fun. But around age six, boys actually switch their attention really strongly to their dads. And you notice this in almost every family and everywhere in the world. There's this kind of crossing over to dad. And that's when spending time together, doing stuff, being sort of told this is how you're kind with animals, this is how you're safe with tools, this is how you look after other people. If boys are seeing their dad and doing that, having fun, but also getting lots of absorbing how to be a good person. And then at 14, what happens, and I know you'll smile at this and listeners will too, is they suddenly don't want to know mum and dad anymore.
I haven't got to that stage yet, thankfully.
No, yes, and that's a healthy thing, but the thing to do is to realise that they want to look wider, don't just abandon them, because the peer group doesn't have what they need either. And that what we most need then is other adults who love our kids, so that when they're really pushing away from us, they don't just go down the street with some mates. They'll go around to someone else's house where their dad will be interesting to talk to.
Mm.
And one of the things we advise dads of teenagers to do is to have trips away with other fathers and their sons, or other fathers and their daughters, so that your teenager can talk to other men who are, because often the kids don't have the same temperament as their parents. There might be another kid's dad who's fantastic with what they're interested in. And so they can broaden out their role models and find people that really match what they perhaps might want to become when they grow up.
I've heard that that's really important to mental health, that kids having role models of adults outside their immediate mum and dad somehow gives them, you know, I guess more examples of ways of problem solving or dealing with situations.
Yes. For instance, we're now very concerned about girls and what's called the premature sexualization of girls. And one of the things that's changed is that girls 50 years ago would be talking many hours a day to older women. They would have aunties and grandmothers and other women just, you know, working together on things. And so teenage girls would get lots of kind of savvy, wise women telling them about boys and men, and that's more to you than you know, good looks, and good looks don't last anyway. And those messages that our culture now really doesn't give. And so I think we're a culture that kind of abandons the adolescents and assumes they just want to be off by themselves. And I think we really got that wrong.
I'm talking with Steve Bidulph. He's the author of The New Manhood. Now, Steve, in the book you run through the five truths of manhood. Can you take us through them now?
Yes. Now, one of the things that we've realised that is done in all the older cultures is that there was a big effort to turn boys into men. At a certain stage, the boys would be shifted in some kind of ceremony or sacred process to move them from boyhood to manhood in a very sharply delineated way. At a certain age, you would become a man.
Mm.
Part of that was teaching the boys what a man was and what was expected of them. Now, boy psychology is very much to do with excitement and self importance and pleasure and what I want to do and having fun and things like that, and that's fine in children, But in the new manhood, I wanted to delineate what actually is a man, what's a whole adult male.
Mm.
And in a nutshell, without going through the whole list of the five, the main message is that a man lives for other people. He no longer lives for himself as his central thing, but he lives to look after the life around him. And he still enjoys himself and he still has a good time, but his primary driving reason for existing is to look out for his family and his community and his world. And in Indigenous societies, this was made very clear. You know, you're the protector and you're the one that looks after the animals and the people and the children and the women. And so we kind of lost that. And so we have sportsmen now who just are hopelessly immature, and even political leaders who don't seem to really realize what their job is. And so this idea of a man as someone who's selfless and kind and strong for others got somewhat lost. And I think if we don't give boys a positive, even if it's a very high thing to aim for, they just don't know what they're supposed to do. And there's plenty of messages saying, have sex, drive cars, get lots of money, get drunk. That's very strong in the culture. But we don't have a message that says you can feel really, really proud of yourself if you take these values and these kinds of behaviours.
Interesting. And so how does this affect relationships with women? Because that's another sort of a big area of brokenness, I suppose, in our society, men and women and our relationship with each other.
Yes. Well, there are two chapters in the book that's specifically looking at this. One's just called Men and Women, and the other one's called Men and Sex, because I ended up thinking that sex needed a chapter of its own.
Yeah, for men, it does, I'm sure.
But I think, if for your listeners, in a nutshell, one of the strongest messages is to realize that all relationships, marriages and partnerships, have a honeymoon stage that's exuberant and lovely and everything's terrific. And then they have a stage where it goes into conflict. And to realize that that's not the end of the story, that conflict isn't a sign of things going wrong. It's a sign of you growing up.
Mm.
And does that make sense to you?
Yeah, that's a really positive way of looking at
it. Yes, because let's face it, when we're in love as young couples, it's all really a fantasy, really. And we like them because they like us. and that's not going to sort of last through, sick children and